Thanks, Betty. It's nice to be here. I want to recognize a few individuals before I get started. The first is my mother, who's in the audience and who came to this meeting with me and whom I have to thank for all of the advantages that I enjoyed throughout my life and the inspiration for doing a lot of the work that I do. I also want to thank a number of mentors who are here in the room, too many to mention, but people who have influenced my career over the years. And I also would like to make a plug for Bill Weiss' book. He's too modest to do it himself, but I've already started reading this, and it's perfect for this audience. The bottom line are public health tactics corporations use to influence health and health policy and what we can do to counter them, and you can buy it with a 15% discount over at the expo. I've already started it. It's fantastic. I want to give you two views of corporations to begin with, one from the Chicago School of Economics, the second from the MIT Linguistics Department. First, Milton Friedman. The only social responsibility of business is to increase its profits. Equally true, corporations have no moral conscience. They are designed by law to be concerned only for their stockholders and not, say, what are sometimes called their stakeholders, like the community or the workforce. I'm going to fill you with a huge amount of information over the next 20 minutes, and it's going to seem like I've regurgitated and projectile vomited over you a number of facts about corporations. I want to assure you that not only this slideshow, but about 125 others are all open access and are all available on my website, which I'll show at the end of the presentation. It's publichealthandsocialjustice.org, so don't feel like you need to take any notes on this. We'll first talk about how corporations have come to dominate the world's economy, talk about corporate taxation, corporate crime, corporations in education, corporations in the media, international non-cooperation and isolationism, and how corporations have influenced U.S. government policy in this area, maybe some case studies if there's time, and then some solutions to the increasing maladaptive activities that corporations conduct on a daily basis that do tremendous harm to public health. And I have to also say that I am giving another talk at 1:10 in the Peace Caucus, so when I'm done with this, I'm going to be running out, but I will be back for the Q&A at the end. And I apologize to my fellow speakers for having to run out on them. Corporations dominate the global economy. Today, there are almost 6 million corporations, and 90% of transnational corporations are headquartered in the Northern Hemisphere, mimicking that Northern-Southern Hemisphere divide. Yet, only 500 corporations control 70% of world trade. Today, 53 of the world's 100 largest economies are private corporations, whereas 47 are countries. So you end up with these bizarre situations where a company like Walmart is larger than Israel or Greece. Israel has nuclear weapons. Presumably Walmart could too if it's so desired to do that. And AT&T is larger than Ireland. Now, many companies are publicly traded on the stock market, and in America today, the top 1% of Americans own 51% of all stocks, bonds, and mutual fund assets. And why is this important? Well, corporations are answerable to their shareholders, i.e., the wealthiest. And governments, at least, are answerable, in theory, to their citizens, either through democratic elections or, in a worst-case scenario, revolutions. So the increasing presence in the global economy of corporations means increasing control by the wealthiest over the poorest. In a nutshell, corporations internalize profits and externalize health and environmental costs. And there are a number of examples of this. The traditional one would be the mining industry. I should also add that on the website, there is a paper that I wrote for Z Magazine, which is a progressive left-wing journal that is probably read by amongst members of my family, maybe a few others, and that's about it. No, actually, Z gets fairly broad circulation and is well respected, and Chomsky and others write for it. But there's a piece on corporations that go into all of these issues in a lot greater detail, and it's posted there. What about corporate taxation? Well, corporate tax rates have dropped tremendously. Back in 1950, corporations shouldered 30% of the nation's tax burden versus just 8% today. And nearly one-third of all large U.S. corporations pay zero annual tax. Why is this? Well, corporate tax breaks and loopholes, corporate welfare, cheating and underpayment, which are common, and offshore tax havens, which are used to shelter capital. What about crime? We all know on the evening news, if it bleeds, it leads. And so all we hear about every night are murders, robberies, gang shootings, etc. Yet, if you look at the numbers, there's a tremendous disparity here. So each year in America, we lose about $4 billion to burglary and robbery, and yet hundreds of billions to even trillions of dollars to white-collar crime. You won't hear much about this on the news, and part of it is because the web of media control of news channels. So NBC, for instance, is owned by General Electric. General Electric, big military contractor, builds nuclear power plants. It's unlikely that you're going to hear stories about the risks of nuclear power on the NBC nightly news. Similarly, before it was bought by Viacom, CBS was owned by Westinghouse, another large military industrial contractor. Why is there so much corporate crime? I think the predominant reason is that the fines are meager and are often considered a cost of doing business. Corporate crime is under-prosecuted, and prosecutors are woefully underfunded. And this is of particular relevance to public health, confidential legal settlements keep important public health and safety information secret, which may delay governmental intervention and cause unnecessary morbidity and mortality. With the rise of corporatization, we've seen a number of consequences. The first is increasing inflation, then rising unemployment. We've seen increasing industry consolidation and mergers, the rise of the perma-temp, those that are essentially full-time workers who work for years but without benefits, and the expatriation of jobs, often to overseas factories which lack adequate occupational safety and health and environmental standards. Furthermore, there has been a marked decline in union membership over the last 50 years in the United States. Somebody's making out okay, and that's the CEOs. Since 1980, CEO salaries have gone up 500%, and today the average CEO makes between 350 and 400 times the salary of the average U.S. worker, versus just 41 times the average salary in 1960. Is this really necessary for innovation? I would argue no, that there are many other countries that have lower rates or lower ratios that are equally innovative and whose businesses are equally, if not more, successful. I now want to talk about the topic of corporate involvement in education. And by education, I mean not only the education of our students, but also the education of the populace and the miseducation or lobbying of our legislators to force the corporate agenda down America's throats. Is my bias showing? Are there any corporate attorneys in the audience going? I don't want to end up with a slap suit after this, which I have been threatened with litigation for some of my writings before. And if we have time, we'll talk about that. So in the United States, unfortunately, public education is in disarray. Our schools are ranked the lowest among Western nations. There's widespread ignorance and superstition. I could give you a number of facts about the number of students who believe in evolution. Probably the most hilarious, if not frightening, one I heard recently was that 30% of American school children between age 15 and 19 cannot identify the Pacific Ocean on a map. And our kids, when they're not in school, are playing video games or watching television. And the average American youth spends 900 hours per year in school, but 1,500 hours per year watching TV. So how do corporations further their miseducational agenda? The first is through advertising, the second through AstroTurf, which is the creation of artificial grassroots coalitions, which may represent only one individual who's rented an apartment building and has a blast fax and is sending missives out to legislators and writing op-eds and so on to create the impression of a groundswell of public support either for or against a certain bill. And then through the creation of corporate front groups, which often have eco-friendly sounding names. The tactics that corporations to do this often will invoke poor people as the beneficiaries of their activities. They tend to characterize their opponents as technophobic, anti-science, and against progress, and to portray their products as environmentally beneficial despite evidence to the contrary. Now, I'm going to back up for a minute. The second thing that they do is, or the next thing that they do is, the production and dissemination of corporate-sponsored environmental education materials. Now, many of our public schools don't have the financial resources to hire teachers of environmental science. And so what they do is they will take, for free usually, syllabi and complete curricula from corporations whose agenda is to miseducate our youth about what they're doing. And I'm going to give you two, again, hilarious but disturbing examples. So International Paper has an environmental education curriculum with information such as clear cutting promotes the growth of trees that require full sunlight and allows efficient site preparation for the next crop. Well, this is true, as is the next statement from Exxon's Energy Cube. Gasoline is simply solar power hidden in decayed matter. Or offshore drilling creates reefs for fish. Again, it's true, but it skirts the real issue of the risks of deforestation and of our reliance on carbon-based fuels. Corporations have also come to increasingly infiltrate academia through the increased private commercial funding of university research, as well as secrecy and gag clauses. They have also worked through the media, and many media corporations have a tremendous spider web of corporate links through co-ownership, boards of directors, et cetera. And today, just five corporations control the majority of US media, down from 50 in 1983. Basically, doubt and misinformation are their products. Well, the average person who's not necessarily well-educated, who's gone through the public school system, hears about reports related to corporate activities or to basic science. And often what the media will do is try to present a, quote, fair and balanced approach to, quote, controversies, such as evolution or global warming, which really within the scientific community are not at all controversies. I want to give you just one example of how it might be possible that the public might be misled into thinking, in this case, that global warming is not real, nor is it caused by human activities. So this was a very important article in Science Magazine back in 2004, where they looked at 928 peer-reviewed scientific journals over the preceding, I think it was 5 years. And none of them were in doubt as to the existence or cause of global warming. They then looked at 636 articles in the four most popular newspapers in the country and found that 53%, a little over half, expressed doubt as to the existence and primary cause of global warming. They also make their presence known through lobbying. There are over 15,000 full-time lobbyists in Washington today, and the estimates of return on lobbying range from $28 to $100 for every dollar spent. Lobbying groups spent $3.5 billion in 2009. This was a record. And all single-issue ideological groups, for comparison, pro-choice, anti-abortion, feminist, consumer groups, senior citizens, spent less than $100 million. The financial sector spent over $1.7 billion on campaign contributions for federal elections between 1998 and 2008. And the bailout dollars, for instance, were a huge return on this investment. This is probably the most important slide of the talk. This increasing presence of corporations, their activities, is putting democracy at risk. And public health relies on democracy, because true democracy demands an informed citizenry, which requires strong public education, freedom of the press, a number of media outlets who will present viewpoints without bias, and involvement, the willingness, the time, and the money to become involved in activities to further social justice and further public health. Corporations have also wielded their authority in influencing the US to not adopt certain international agreements or to try to bend those agreements to their own means. And this is through misinformation, lobbyists, the revolving door between industry and government, and a huge behind-the-scenes role. And one example of this is in the World Tobacco Treaty. These are some of the treaties that, at least in part, due to the influence of corporations on government policy, the US has refused to either sign or approve. The Kyoto Protocol on Climate Change, the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, the Convention on the Prohibition of Anti-Personal Landmines, the Convention on the Rights of the Child, CEDAW, the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, the Convention for the Suppression of Traffic in Persons, the Stockholm Convention on Persistent Organic Pollutants, all very important international treaties relevant to public health. I'm going to skip through the case studies for a moment. I will just tell you, I'll go through these quickly. There, each of these pieces, a piece on General Electric, a front group, the American Council on Science and Health, the tobacco treaty, the increasing rise of direct-to-consumer CT full-body scans to screen for cancer, the influence of corporations on genetically modified crops and labeling and hormones in the food supply, the rise of luxury care clinics in academic medical centers, the for-profit prison industry, and the chemicals industry. I've written articles on all of these, and they're all on the website. And if there's time in the discussion, we'll talk about them. The health insurance industry, we also know, has a number of dubious practices from delisting, cherry picking, and the use of pre-existing conditions to refuse payment for various medical conditions. Their companies often provide a lower quality of care, and they have very high administrative costs versus our government-run programs. They have large profit margins, and their loyalty, again, is to their shareholders, not to their patients, and they're marked by corruption. Everyone knows about the pharmaceutical industry, so I'll skip that because I do want to get to the solution slide. How do we fix this problem? The first is we need to restructure our tax system. The second is we need to punish corporate scofflaws with large fines and serious jail time. I would put CEOs of, say, Union Carbide, now under Dow, who was responsible for the Bhopal disaster, in a maximum security prison with a roommate who was a mass murderer. I'm not kidding. We need to increase enforcement budgets to combat corporate crime. We need to eliminate confidential legal settlements that are relevant to public health and safety. Some would say we need to work with corporations on healthy PR, things like shareholder activism. There are risks and benefits to doing this. Some might say that this is like a pacifist joining the military to change its culture of violence. I don't know if this will work. I think in some cases it does. On a personal level, activism, letter writing, protesting, whistleblowing, involvement in community groups, lobbying your legislators, even running for office, all can be valuable. If you look back at the founding of this country, a near majority of our first congresspersons were actually scientists. And now there's very few scientists and physicians and nurses in Congress. We need to increase public funding of education. We need to have independent scientific review of school curricula and prohibit the use of sponsored curricula. We need to establish safeguards regarding corporate involvement in academic research, aim for higher standards of journalism, and support alternative media. I want to end with two views of the way the world works and then a graphic illustration. Of course, our Declaration of Independence says that all men are created equal. But as you all know, George Orwell said, some are more equal than others. This is not photoshopped. So I'd like to leave you, after this depressing talk, with at least a little note of optimism. Nobel Prize winning author Gunter Grass said, the first job of a citizen is to keep your mouth open. And I hope that you'll be inspired by the rest of the talks today to do that and to go out and to work against the corporations. And if you think you're too small to have an impact, try going to bed with a mosquito in your tent. There's the website. Everything's up there. Thank you very much. I'm going to go out.